It is Friday. It's not a day to play for us, is it? It's a day to work. Good evening, truth seekers. Welcome to this edition of the Molloy Show. And this hour is sponsored by Andrew Welch, whose message is in memory of Christina Taylor Greene. May we all live up to her expectations. The little 9-year-old girl who was gunned down in Tucson. Andrew Welch, in memory of Christina Taylor Greene, may we all live up to her expectations. Wouldn't that be nice? So many religious mythologies place so much emphasis on children. The Christian faith has their savior saying the kingdom of God is like children, the innocence of children. That doesn't stop the right-wingers, though, from shooting them, does it? Or, for that matter, the Obama administration from blowing them away in Afghanistan or Pakistan or Iraq. Oh, don't get me started. It's Friday night. Dear God, can't you ever lighten up, Molloy? Brett in Conroe, Texas, sent me an email. The subject line is laugh or cry, not sure which to do. And he writes, Mike, isn't it funny or sad how nobody has pointed out that with the state dinner the other night, the 2009 Nobel Peace Prize winner was breaking bread with the head of the government that is currently imprisoning the 2010 Nobel Peace Prize winner. WTF? Sorry, just trying to get my brain wrapped around that one. Yeah. But apparently, global politics trumps everything. Global capitalism trumps everything. We had at that dinner two very clear and distinct capitalist factions. An empire that is dying, that's us, and an empire that is being born, that's them. And the reason I think the capitalists are doing so, or the Chinese capitalists are doing so well, is because they have figured out that you, A, don't allow unions, B, don't allow dissent, C, don't have anything as quaint as a Bill of Rights, D, pay people pig wages after having kept them poor for decades. And over in this country, in the dying capitalist empire, there is still the idea of trying to make capitalism work with a friendly face on it, or a soul, or a heart, which is impossible. Capitalism is not your Uncle Charlie. Capitalism is a vicious, mean-spirited, take no prisoners, zero-sum game of predation, and to anyone who gets caught up in it, you may make a few bucks for a while, you may be stroked along for a while and told that you are part of something called a middle class, but eventually capitalism says, that's enough of that crap, back into the pit. So, but you know all that, I'm not telling you anything you don't know. ThinkProgress.org had a couple of good pieces up today. One of them, we have a congressional delegation here in. Wait a minute. What's this? Hold on. MSNBC and Keith Olbermann have ended their contract. I don't know. I've got three or four emails here. The memo went out at NBC now that Comcast has taken over. Olbermann was one of the few who may not have attacked Stephen Cohen yesterday. Not sure. Oh, the guy that referenced the Nazis. What's this? Either just retired or was forced to. I'm getting two different stories from two sources. I don't know. I don't know. I got all of a sudden, All of a sudden, I got four or five emails here. He just announced his resignation on the show a few minutes ago. Wouldn't that be something? Back to the Georgia delegation. We have a congressional delegation here that is made up of racist clowns, for the most part. Every single one of the white males. And I don't think there might be. Do we have still have one or two Democrats? But I think they're both African American. Almost the entire. Let me just qualify by saying that almost the entire Georgia congressional delegation is either a clown, a cheat, a liar, a skunk. Certainly a racist. They're all Christian, I believe. You know, the real good kind of Christian, the evangelical. If you're not a Christian, you're not my friend. Like the new governor over in Alabama. But anyway, Paul Brown, Republican from Georgia here, joined conservative radio host, somebody named Scott Hennen. I don't know who that is. He was on his program, discussed a variety of topics. At one point during the show, a listener called in and asked Brown about the plans of some members of Congress to sit with opposition party legislators during the State of the Union. You know, they're all going to do that. It's like a mixer in junior high school, right? Instead of all the boys over here and all the girls over here, one of the deans of the the dean of boys said to the dean of girls, "Look, let's get the kids to mix." So this year, when we have the ninth grade mixer dance, instead of having the boys here and the girls here, we're going to make them all sit together. How's that? And, of course, the dean of girls said, well, there might be some pregnancies come out of that. And the dean of boys said, nah, come on. These are ninth graders. Don't worry about it. That's what this sounds like. Somebody, and I think it was a Democrat, came up with the idea, instead of all, if you're in the podium, you're president facing the Republican, or the Democrats are always over here to your right, and the Republicans are always over here to your left, and the president will say something, and all the Republicans sit there like half-asses, and just sit there, and somebody says something else, and the Democrats all sit there and pick their noses. I mean, it's exactly like junior high school, right? Oh my God! Oh! Gag me with a yearbook! So this year they decided, oh, let's all sit together. Well, Paul Brown, representative from Georgia Republican, says, ow now! Ow now! The caller to this toy radio show, whoever this freak is, the caller explained that she wants the Republicans in the Senate and House to not take the bait and sit with the Democrats during the speech. Brown replied that he agreed wholeheartedly and said that he doesn't want to sit together being kissy-kissy with the opposition party because, he says, that's just a way to try to silence Republicans. Well, not really, Paul. Only if you get French kissed. If one of the Democrats leans over and grabs you by the back of your head and rams their tongue down your throat, then you'll be silenced for a while. He also said it would hamper the ability of Republicans to stand up to what the Democrats are doing when, quote, Obama spews his venom. End quote. And then Brown went on to say that it's actually the liberals who are promoting this kind of venom. It's not the conservatives, it's the liberals. Now, I don't live in this half-wit bastard's district, but that's part of the Georgia delegation. Representative Paul Brown, B-R-O-U-N, B-R-O-U-N, Brown. No, he doesn't want to be all kissy-kissy. Oh, my God. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
We'll be right back. practice your synchronized screaming. It's Mike Malloy.
Who made me judge and jury? Here it seems I'm bearing witness to me.
21 past the hour. Yeah, it looks like over in the New York Times reporting it now. And MSNBC. He's gone. Keith Urban's gone. Well, then no surprise there. That reduces the liberal contingent, or whatever you want to call it, on media down to just a handful. I'm sure it had to do with Comcast taking over MSNBC or NBC. Comcast, which is extreme right-wing organization, is going to close them down one at a time. Rachel's not on tonight either, but a lot of times she takes off on a Friday. Although, her website did list all the people she's going to have on tonight, and taking the place is, what's his name, he usually substitutes, from The Nation? Or is it Mother Jones? Damn it, I'm sorry, I just can't think of his name offhand. Senior moment. So, the Oberman program, dead in the water. That's a real shame, too. It has nothing to do with ratings. It has nothing to do with his popularity. It has nothing to do with the strength of his program. It has everything to do with what we've been talking about on this program for a number of years. And do you know... we've been talking about the future of media in this country, especially political media. Here's another example of this is probably what will replace Oberman.
They've been sitting here for the last few minutes trying to come up with a list of people that I want to kill with a shovel. People that I just like to whack over the head with a shovel. Somebody actually wrote in a letter to the editor and said that I wanted to kill Daniel Ruth for his editorial, which I believe I may have said. But how many people have I said, let's kill with a shovel, huh? How many people have I said, let's light them up and shoot them in the head? I think quite a few. You know, everybody who has a stinking opinion now seems to be an extremist. There doesn't seem to be anybody that actually makes sense that can get any face time on television. You know, it's all people like Jesse Jackson or Charles Rangel. Man, that guy, there's a guy. Hey, there's where we start. Charles Rangel, do you have the sound effects for me? If we're going to do let's kill people with a shovel, let's do it the right way.
And now, people we'd like to beat to death with a shovel.
Charlie Rangel.
Listen again for more people we'd like to beat to death with a shovel.
See, I feel better already. There's a time for everything. To every purpose, there is a season. And let me tell you, baby, today, the season is clubbing people over the head with shovels.
Oh. I see. This hour is sponsored by Andrew Welch, whose message is, in memory of Christina Taylor Greene, may we all live up to her expectations. Thanks, Andrew. The name I couldn't think of is Chris Hayes, of course, from The Nation. Police in Arlington, Massachusetts, this week seized what is referred to as a large amount of weapons and ammunition from a local businessman named Travis Corcoran after he wrote a blog post threatening U.S. lawmakers in the wake of the shooting of Representative Gabriella Giffords. In a post on his blog, titled One Down and 534 to Go, Corcoran applauded the shooting of Giffords and justified the assassination of lawmakers because he argues that the federal government has grown far beyond its constitutional limits. He wrote, quote, it is absolutely, absolutely unacceptable to shoot indiscriminately, target only politicians and their staff, and leave regular citizens alone, end quote. Arlington, Massachusetts Police Captain Robert Bongiorno said, quote, we certainly take this as a credible threat. He added that multiple federal law enforcement agencies were involved. Authorities also suspended Corcoran's gun license, so he is currently not facing any charges. Neither's Glenn Beck. Corcoran refers to himself as an anarcho-capitalist. Anarcho-capitalist. And while his blog has been taken down, based on his Twitter page, he appears to hold views similar to those of many in the anti-government libertarian wing of the conservative movement, like many Tea Party activists. Anarcho-capitalism is a radical subset of libertarianism and is often referred to as libertarian anarchy? That's a new one on me. I hadn't heard of that one. We'll be right back. Stay with us. If you want to. I don't know tonight, man.
Mike Malone.
25 before the hour. So anyway, Overman is gone, and that's a shame. I would assume he was, I have to make the assumption he was fired, because I've been there so many times. There's only so much liberal talk that's allowed on America's airwaves, radio and television. There's only so much, and once it starts to get anywhere near, say, 10% of what goes out over the airwaves, the capitalists who own media make a decision, and they say, okay, somebody's got to go, or some two people have got to go. I went through this with Disney, ABC, and they figure out a way to get rid of you. So, well, there's no sound? Oh, damn, now what? There we go. I think we have sound now. People in the chat room get very, very, very upset when I don't have sound. There it goes. Okay. Now, if you're listening on the radio, you don't know what the hell I'm talking about, but that's all right. We only have 37 listeners on the radio anyway. Okay. What else we got here? Oh, back to this. I got to get back to this right-wing blogger. Police seized a large amount of weapons. He was going to start killing members of Congress. This is what Glenn Beck has been trying to get people to do for a very, very, very long time. To arm up, take your weapon, go kill people, whether it's a shovel or a gun, rifle, shoot them in the head, beat them to death. We live in a period of time that is not unlike Germany in the late 20s, early 30s. And if you don't believe it, then you're a goddamn fool. What do you want? Play the back thing again about, play the part where he's talking about shooting people in the head. Can you play that one? And then we'll do the one where he talks about killing people with shovels.
The radicals that you in Washington have co-opted and brought in wearing sheep's clothing change the pose. You get the ends. You've been using them? They believe in communism. They believe and have called for revolution. You're going to have to shoot them in the head. But warning, they may shoot you.
You're going to have to shoot them in the head. In a Twitter exchange with a reporter, Laura Leslie, this would-be murderer, Travis Corcoran, in Arlington, Massachusetts, He lays out a conventional anti-government philosophy and explains in depth why he views assassination as legitimate. This is what he says, quote, I assert that the U.S. federal government has grown unconstitutionally large and the legislature exceeds the powers delegated to it by the people. As per the Declaration of Independence, when a government becomes destructive, those ends, it may be abolished. And the most important and the most moral approach is that which spares the maximum number of lives. Thus, assassination is a legitimate tool. Listen to this crazy son of a bitch. This is what happens. This is what happens when you listen to Beck, Hannity, Savage, Limbaugh. If you're already a borderline jack-legged freak anyway, this is what happens. You start saying stuff like this. He goes on to further justify assassination as morally legitimate. He cites Catholic just war doctrine, among other theories, and explains, quote, it's illegal, yes, but it's not un-American. America was founded on the idea of shooting government officials. Lexington and Concord. God damn. In another tweet, he writes, quote, I disagree with murder, but shooting politicians who pass illegitimate, unconstitutional laws is not murder, end quote. And in case there's any doubt about his sincerity, he writes, nope, it's not a joke. I'm 100% serious. He also appears to be a fan of Senator Rand Paul, Republican of Kentucky. Retweeting a positive message about him in May, he writes, quote, lefties, before you start fringe baiting Rand Paul, note that he's better on civil liberties than most Democratic senators and Obama. He seems to dislike liberals. Another tweet, he writes, quote, you so-called liberals make me laugh. You're all for free speech until someone disagrees. Then it's report him. You rancid son of a bitch. Oh, yeah, report him. Why should he be reported? He's only advocating mass political assassination. He also accuses Daily Kos of Stalinism. God. Whoa. Oh, by the way, this hour is brought to you by Andrew Welch. In memory of Christina Taylor Greene, 9-year-old Christina Taylor Greene, gunned down in Tucson, Arizona, by a right-wing maniac. I added that. Andrew's message, in memory of Christina Taylor Greene, may we all live up to her expectations. Whew. I don't know, man. I don't know what to think. I guess you heard that Obama today announced the appointment of Jeffrey Immelt to head his economic council of economic advisors. Jeffrey Immelt, I got on the internet today and on the internets and printed off a whole bunch of stuff about Jeffrey Immelt. The appointment of this guy is the last bit of proof that you need, if you're still looking for proof, that Barack Obama subscribes to the idea of predatory capitalism as a viable, not just economic system, but now a governing system. And I'm sorry if you are still a holdout, still believing that liberals can, quote, hold Obama's feet to the fire, and get him to conduct himself like a real Democrat. Forget about it. Save your energy. Get away from Obama as soon as you can and start focusing on the idea of building coalitions in your neighborhood, your town, your township, your city, your county, whatever. And just figure you're in for the long haul, okay? Because it's going to take a while. If we ever do get our country back, it's going to take a while. But forget Obama. Obama is Obama. He has absolutely nothing to do with liberalism or with anything other than providing satisfaction to the people who put him in office. And those are the real powerful capitalists, the Goldman Sachs people, the J.P. What am I trying to say? J.P. Morgan Chase people. That's who Obama's allegiance goes to. He's had 2 years to prove otherwise. Obama is a warmonger. Obama continues to bomb children the ages of his two daughters to death. He continues to fly Predator drones scores more than the murderous George W. Bush and the vampire Dick Cheney ever did. Barack Obama is, you might as well just accept this, truth seekers. I mean, what do you need? What do you need to finally tell you? Jeffrey Immelt, who is, you know, he called Barack Obama anti-business at one point. Here's what he said. Immelt had harsh words for Barack Obama. This was not that long ago, lamenting what Immelt called a terrible national mood and expressing concern that overregulation in response to the global financial crisis would damp a tepid U.S. economic recovery. Business did not like the United States president, he said, and the president did not like business, making a point of raising Angela Merkel, Germany's chancellor, for her defense of German industry. GE later disputed Immelt's remarks, saying they had been taken out of context. Obama has made a decision, and it should be as clear as the nose on your face. In July of last year, General Electric announced that they were planning to close its 700,000-square-foot South Valley Aviation plant that had been manufacturing jet engine parts since the late 1960s. This was in New Mexico, I think. Was it New Mexico? I think. Despite the fact that they received 14 federal stimulus grants totaling $24.9 million to create jobs. But despite receiving the stimulus money, the plant was closed a few weeks ago on September 24th, eliminating the last of 400 local jobs. From the end of 2008 to the end of 2009, GE eliminated 18,000 jobs in the United States, most of which were sent overseas. You got to wonder how many other local GE facilities lost jobs. And what did GE do with the $25 million handed to him by Barack Obama, right? According to OpenSecrets.org, GE's Political Action Committee, its individual members, employees, and owners donated $500,000 to the Obama 2008 presidential campaign. That amount does not include corporate donations, which are difficult to document, as GE has literally dozens of organizations that are subsidiaries, including the NBC television network. Looks like GE made a good investment. And you know what is really outrageous about this? It's not so much Obama and his deciding to have sex with the capitalists and corporatists in America to the detriment of the working class and middle class in the country. No, no, no. You know what's really bad about this? These brain-dead, filthy pukes, these conservatives still want to call him a...
Rage Against the Flying Monkey Right with Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. Sorry about just blasting right through the commercial there if you're listening via the radio. Back to Jeffrey Immelt, who was appointed to... First, he was on Obama's Economic Advisory Board, the one that decided it would be a good idea to destroy Social Security, turn it over to the bankers on Wall Street, right? GE is facing its first lawsuit over the Omniscan drug. A jury is scheduled to hear the case this Monday, I believe, in federal court in Cleveland. At issue is whether GE's Omniscan, it's a drug that they would give patients before CAT scans, and it was supposed to make the CAT scan more pronounced. But at issue is whether GE's Omniscan caused an elderly Minnesota woman to get a crippling and potentially fatal condition called nephrogenic systemic fibrosis, or NSF. According to ProPublica reporter Jeff Girth, I thought he wrote for the New York Times. Well, I guess he's over at ProPublica now. Jeff Girth writes, quote, plaintiff's lawyers say GE hid Omniscan's risks and failed to protect patients after problems began to emerge. An association between Omniscan and this fatal condition was first publicly disclosed in early 2006 following reports of 25 cases in Denmark and Austria. The disease is marked by scaling, hardening, and tightening of the skin and can cause lethal fibrosis of internal organs. GE has consistently defended Omniscan, saying that the cause of the disease, NSF, is unknown. Last year, the Food and Drug Administration determined that Omniscan and two other drugs should be banned in severe kidney patients. Girth has also investigated how Imeld and GE were able to become one of the biggest beneficiaries of the bank bailout, conflicting statements Imeld made about GE's financial health, and how the SEC began to look into those conflicts. You can go to ProPublica.org and just look for Jeff Girth, and you can find a reporting on this poison that Omniscan, the GE, has put into mostly elderly people. Oh, I guess GE's position is, what difference does it make? They're going to die anyway. So, ML will become the head of a new presidential panel called the President's Council on Jobs and Competitiveness. When ML took over as CEO of GE, the shares traded at $40. It's now down to 18. God damn. Imelt has ended thousands of jobs at GE. Tens of thousands, I guess. Sent them all overseas or whatever. President Obama said, quote, Jeff Immelt's experience at GE and his understanding of the vital role the private sector plays in creating jobs and making America competitive makes him up to the challenge of leading this new council. Oh, my God. Well, did he really say that? Yeah, I guess he did. Jeff Immelt's experience at GE. What he's done at GE, Mr. President, was to destroy jobs, close plants, ship factories overseas, fire people, drive the stock price down, put poison on the market that is killing people. And you say his understanding of the vital role the private sector plays in creating jobs makes him up to the challenge of leading this new council. Oh, by the way, Immelt's appointment today comes as Obama has decided to hell with Democrats, to hell with liberals, to hell with progressives, and he's going with the business sector in the wake of the terrible setbacks of the midterm elections. You know, William Daley, that he, you know, a brother of the mayor of Chicago, William Daley, former Commerce Secretary. He's also a senior executive at J.P. Morgan Chase. Okay, look, last time for you people who just can't seem to get your minds around what Barack Obama really represents. What is it going to take? What is it going to take to break through to you that Obama is not a Democrat, he is not a liberal, and he's goddamn sure not a progressive? I mean, what does it take? Now, the you know, the cockroaches on the flying monkey right wing in this country, they want to continue to tell you that he's a socialist, which only shows one thing: the massive and demonstrable ignorance and stupidity on the part of these right wingers. I mean, Jesus God, it's just astonishing. So we have a government of, by, and for the capitalists. We have a media that, you know, I've been telling you for months, the only reason Beck wants people killing each other in the street is to provide entertainment for him. That's all Rush Limbaugh has ever wanted. You know, just black against white, Jew against Gentile, gay against straight, poor against rich, kill, kill, murder, murder. That's all they want. And the reason they want it is because it's fun for them. Oh, well. All right, let's take a break. Bernie Sanders hopes MLT will focus on U.S. jobs. Bernie, come on. Come on, Bernie. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Some people do not.
Reporting. Here's how they're putting it. Keith Olbermann, the liberal outspoken anchor of MSNBC's Countdown show, had his contract dramatically terminated by the U.S. cable news network's parent company, NBC, on Friday night. I guess while he was on the air. Abruptly announcing that the current show would be his last, Olbermann calmly read aloud a poem by James Thurber before signing off with the words, "Good night and good luck." While Olbermann was live on air, NBC issued a statement reading, "MSNBC and Keith Olbermann have ended their contract. The last broadcast of Countdown with Keith Olbermann will be this evening. And MSNBC thanks Keith for his integral role in MSNBC's success, and we wish him well in his future endeavors." The Associated Press reported that Phil Griffin, MSNBC's president, would not comment on Olbermann's exit, but a spokesman did say that the acquisition of NBC Universal by Comcast had nothing to do with the decision. No, not a thing. Bizarrely, nearly half an hour later, during an ad break in the following program, Rachel's, MSNBC showed a station promo featuring Olbermann, but the promo was interrupted halfway through by a mattress commercial. Christ. Oh, well, good night and good luck. One comment on the website from a reader in the UK. And the reader says, "Comcast has scored its first bullseye. Eliminating Keith Olbermann is only the first shot in its project of homogenization of NBC's news department. Now every network and cable news channel will only repeat the company, the White House line, which is all praise neoliberalism and austerity. No dissent will be allowed. And while Keith Olbermann's liberal, he's hardly what anyone except the famously ignorant American audience would call left. Any and all dissenting voices will soon be silenced as the empire goes out with a whimper, not a bang." Kind of sad, huh? Obama, a socialist. Oh, well. Bernie Sanders issued a statement about Jeffrey Immelt, the head of GE, being appointed to lead Obama's Council on Jobs and Competitiveness. Jesus Christ, why even use that language? Oh, well. Immelt has been outspoken about job growth, not in the United States, but in China. Bernie Sanders says, quote, I hope he changes his mind and focuses on rebuilding the manufacturing sector here in the United States, not in China. And in the process creates millions of good-paying jobs, end quote. Bernie went on to say, quote, for the sake of our manufacturing sector and the collapsing middle class, let's hope that Mr. Immelt's appointment by President Obama indicates a transformation in his, Immelt's, thinking. It is time for GE and other large and profitable corporations to start investing in America again, end quote. Oh, Bernie, you know, you're my hero, political hero. You're a real democratic socialist, but come on. You know better. Since 2009, General Electric has closed more than 25 manufacturing plants in the United States, slash tens of thousands of jobs. GE now employs more workers overseas than it does in the United States. While GE has laid off thousands of workers in the United States, it has created more than 30,000 jobs in India over the past decade. Boop, 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 boop. In a Senate floor speech last month, Sanders discussed the disappearance of manufacturing jobs in the United States. The senator cited a statement by Jeffrey Immelt at an investors' meeting on December 6, 2002. Said Immelt, quote, when I am talking to GE managers, I talk China, 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 China. You need to be there. You need to change the way people talk about it and how they get there. I'm a nut on China. Outsourcing from China is going to grow to $5 billion. We are building a tech center in China. Every discussion today has to center on China. The cost basis is extremely attractive. End quote. Immelt's views were consistent with those of his predecessor, former CEO Jack Welch, who spoke in 2000 of the company GE's search for cheap labor. He said, quote, ideally, we'd have every plant we own on a barge. And Frank Doyle, a former GE executive vice president, was unusually blunt in an interview when he told Business Week magazine about the company's workforce policies. Quote, we did a lot of violence to the expectations of the American workforce. We downsized, we delayered, and we outsourced. End quote. So, if you are still rational, if you still believe that Obama is a liberal or a progressive or a Democrat, please, for your own sake, I mean, I frankly don't give a damn. I gave up on this a long time ago. But you might want to stop conning yourself. Disconnect yourself from Obama and from the Democratic Party. You don't have any choice, truth seeker, if you want to save your country, your house, your job, your family, your future. You don't have any choice. Continuing to tie yourself to Barack Obama, what's the point? What does he have to say or do to let you know, Obama supporter, that he's not interested in the working class, he's not interested in the middle class? And you have to do what I do. I don't mean that the way it sounded. You have to do what I've done if you want to retain your sanity about Obama. Stop listening to him. He is a great orator. He sure is. I've stopped. I can't, you know, I can't, I dare not listen to him anymore, because every time I listen to him to give one of those amazing speeches, you know, I feel myself start to go, whoa, start to wave, whoa. You got to stop. You got to stop. Jeffrey Immelt. Oh, my God. And Monday, as I mentioned, Jeff Gerth writing at ProPublica. Monday, U.S. District Court in Cleveland, the first Omniscan lawsuit to get before a jury. It's a potential bellwether for hundreds of similar cases filed against GE because of another poisonous, destructive product put out by them that is killing people. Oh, God, why am I laughing? All right. When we come back, I have a couple emails here, and Prairie 2. Prairie 2's essay tonight addresses Jeffrey Immelt. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. True blue.
Here's the truth speaker, Mike Malloy.
Coming up after this next break, we will do podcast trivia. I have right in front of me here the question and the answer that can win you a free one-year subscription to Malloy Show commercial-free podcast downloads. During the next break, we shall open the phones, and you can call in. The number is 877-996-2556. All right? From Prairie 2, bringing good things to life, but not here. You have to be above a certain age to remember that bringing good things to life was the GE corporate motto. Prairie 2 writes, President Obama has been on a charm offensive with independent voters by trying to convince them he is pro-business and has been working, with his approval numbers climbing steadily. Republicans have been losing their talking points with Obama signing the renewal of the Bush tax cuts, appointing a Wall Street banker as White House chief of staff, and announcing a drive for pro-business reform of all federal regulations. Yee-haw! The latest thing was to appoint the new head of the President's Council on Jobs and Competitiveness, which used to be called the President's Economic Recovery Advisory Board. It's a great political move, but really he's just given up on that recovery thing and is handing the care of the remaining hens in the chicken house to the foxes. It might seem appropriate to appoint somebody who has created more jobs than anyone else to head this board, but he picked Jeffrey Immelt, the CEO of GE, instead. To be fair, Mr. Immelt has created a lot of jobs, but they were all in China and India. GE does 60% of its business outside the U.S., and this sounds great that a U.S. company is doing so much business. That must mean they bring a lot of money back to the U.S. You can guess how that really works. More than half of the imports into the U.S. are purchased by U.S. companies from the overseas division of the same company and laundered through tax haven countries. That allows them to keep all their profits overseas by jacking up the prices they pay themselves. Woohoo! In fact, U.S. companies pay much higher taxes in China than they do here. The Chinese aren't stupid like we are. Two-thirds of U.S. corporations pay no taxes in the United States. They all pay taxes in China. Jeffrey Umelt got into considerable hot water recently, giving a speech to European businessmen where he was whining about how badly China treats foreign companies. He even suggested they might all leave China. GE disavowed his remarks before he sat down from speaking. Umelt thinks the world is flat and he can go from country to country driving down wages and making the big bucks. China thinks somewhat differently. Umelt can do much damage to the United States economy as he likes, but as China moves aggressively to dominate the world, he will bump up against them wherever he goes. The more damage Umelt and his kind do around the world, the more popular China becomes with its trading partners. Umelt can't push China around, and this upsets Mr. Umelt. But he still has a free hand here, so life isn't so bad. PrairieNumeral2.com. Oh, Jesus, God. Michael in Roswell says, hurtling even faster down the rabbit hole, this is also the day that it was reported that Eric Cantor, you know, the House Majority Leader, Eric Cantor wants to eliminate public financing of campaigns as a cost-cutting measure, quote-unquote. The power of money in this society is destined to completely overwhelm democracy, if it hasn't done so already. Well, I will ask you, Truth Seeker, those of you who are, I hate to keep going on this age thing, but there is a real dividing line between generations in this country about what we were taught at a certain period in this country's history. I'm not talking about ancient history. I'm talking about the 50s and the 60s, right? That's what I'm talking about. And what is being taught now? And what the attitudes were 50 years ago and what they are now. And the curve the United States was on 50 years ago and the curve it's on now, and so on and so on and so on and so on. And if you are above a certain age, I've got to ask you, because I'm above that certain age, did you ever think, in your wildest imagination, back there in the days when you were in elementary school and high school, did you think that you would be alive and in good shape, because you are, when the United States, as a democratic republic, as a good place to live, ended? Did you think you would be alive to see it? I never thought I would. It's happening now. We'll be right back. It's time once again for podcast trivia here on the Malloy program. What do we have for the listeners tonight, Johnny? Well, Mike, our winner tonight will receive a brand new Pontiac Catalina. Oh, wait a minute. They don't make those anymore. All right. Second prize, a free one-year subscription to Malloy Show podcast downloads, all commercial-free. They will make your skin softer, your teeth whiter, and your hair grow longer. Are we ready? We are. Tom is in Bradenton, Florida. Hello, Tom.
Hey, Mike. How you doing tonight?
Fair to partly cloudy. How about you?
I'm a little PO'd at Comcast, but other than that, I'm all right.
You think it was Comcast doing?
Yeah, I certainly do. They're very right-leaning.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. All right, are you ready to play trivia, Tom?
Yes, sir.
All right, let's start the music so that we know it's official. Oh, my God, there it is. Right, can you hear me okay, Tom?
Yes.
Yo, Tom.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, just barely. Can you talk a little louder?
Yeah, sorry.
Okay, here we go. Here's your question. You ready?
Yes.
Okay. A Glenn Beck video clip from June 2010 has been rediscovered and is drawing new attention in light of the Arizona massacre. In the video, what does Glenn Beck instruct his listeners to do to the so-called left-wing Marxist revolutionaries he claims wants to destroy America? A. Hit them in the head with a shovel. B. Buy them a Trenti no-foam decaf latte at Starbucks. 3. Or C, shoot them in the head. Or D, strangle them with their bare hands.
I think it's B, but I'm going to go with C.
C, shoot them in the head. That's it! All right, yay! All right, Tom. Yes, you win. You got
it. Hey, Mike, I actually didn't know I was going to be on podcast trivia, so I appreciate it. But do you have a second I can talk to you?
Yeah. Can you pump up the volume just a little bit? We can barely hear you, and I'm pumping the volume up here, and it's going to blow all of our little...
It's this cheap GE Chinese-made phone. I'm yelling into
it. Is that what it is? All right. Well,
GE makes really cheap stuff except bombs, and they work good.
They work real good, yeah.
Yeah. That's just my opinion about Keith. What do you think's next for MSNBC?
You know, I don't know. I'm sure that a memo, usually the way it works, because I've been in these situations before, a memo will go out, internal memo, and maybe somebody will get their hands on it or somebody will post it on Facebook. But the memo will come from NBC's executives that does nothing but praise Keith Olbermann and thank him for his devoted service to MSNBC and his help in building the network and so on and so forth. And then it will have some line in there about rest assured. This is for internal consumption only. Rest assured that we here in the management division of MSNBC very deeply appreciate the efforts of all of our on-air personalities. So it'll just be hog snot. But I'll tell you what will happen with people like Ed Schultz and Rachel and Lawrence O'Donnell and Tweety Bird and the rest of these people. They will be walking on eggs now. Because
yeah, they censored them then, right?
I'm sorry, say again?
Seems like they've subtly censored them.
Well, the censorship by implication, yeah. I mean, nobody is, you know, it's going to be nothing put out there official. But everybody knows now who works inside MSNBC that a wrong move and their asses will be gone too at the first opportunity. Now, most of these people... well, I should say all of these people that are on camera on MSNBC have contracts. What they did with Olbermann was wait until his contract expired, which I think was about 8:45 tonight Eastern time.
That's really low the way they did it.
Yeah, you know, to nail you when you're on the air, I'm not trying to put myself in the same league as Olbermann, but this is exactly what Air America did to me.
Well, you are. I've been listening to you for six years.
Kathy and I were on our way to work, and I had just won the AIR Award for the City of New York, the best talk show in New York. And we were on our way 3 days earlier. We were on our way to work, and somebody inside Air America called me and said, guess what? They're dropping you from the schedule. And, of course, you know. So I've been here. I know what Oberman's going through. Of course, Oberman, you know, he was making millions. When I worked for Air America, I think I was lucky to make $150 a year. But
no, I know. Do you think he might do something on his own?
No. He may wind up on Oprah's network. Who knows?
Oh, I hope not, guys.
Maybe.
Hey, take care, man. Nice talking to you.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Glad you checked in. Thanks, Tom. Oops, hold on a second. I put him on hold. I did. Stay there, Tom. Stay there. Thank goodness I hit the right button. Damn. First time tonight I hit the right button. Oberman will land on his feet, I'm sure. Where that will be, who knows? Who knows? But I think it should be very clear to all of us out here, outside of MSNBC, exactly why Oberman was fired. He's been way too outspoken. And by that I mean he told too much truth. He had too much fun going after these right-wing pigs. I'll tell you right now, if it weren't for the fact that I own my own program, I wouldn't be broadcasting now. Some of the things I've said, the names I've called these swine, the scum, you just don't do that. You see, I'm always surprised at the radio stations and the satellite broadcasters that continue to carry my program. I really am very grateful, but I'm always surprised. I know that there are some plans in the works to, where that statement I just made to you may not be operative 3 or 4 months down the road with all the stations we carry, that carries our program. But, inside MSNBC now, it's very clear that, there's a new boss in town. First of all, it's Comcast. Comcast and Rupert Murdoch have a relationship that if it were between two people, it would be purely sexual. And I think Murdoch is going to start applying the kind of business corporate pressure on Comcast, if he hasn't already. I realize I might be sounding a little bit naive here because I'm sure it's already gone down. But the word is out now to eliminate those people on television and radio where possible. Eliminate their programs. Get rid of them. There is a general consensus in this country about how things are going to be. There is not going to be a middle class. There are not going to be the kind of perks that Americans got used to. 40-hour work week, 2 weeks paid vacation, time and a half for overtime, publicly financed to some degree, elections. It's gone, folks. Public education is going to be next. You show me a state where public education right now is not in serious, serious trouble. One of the objectives of the right wing that now controls so much in this country is to do away with the Department of Education. Do away with it. On the state level, here in Georgia, for example, there is just an absolute groundswell of activity by the Republican cockroaches who now run this state, every level of the state, counties, the governor's office, the House, the Senate, it's all run by Republicans, all the cabinet offices, all the divisions in state government. And the effort is on now to utterly and absolutely destroy public education here in Georgia, to end it, to absolutely bring it to an end. And, a lot of us are fighting and struggling. We parents who have, kids in public school. The public school that Molly goes to has a very, 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 very active, parent base. And we are determined to not let this happen to our quote school. The overarching truth is, of course, that no matter how supportive we are, we cannot pay salaries to the, you know, 40 teachers and staff members who work at the school. We do the best that we can. But the determination to end public education. We have a talk show host in this city who is just an absolute racist. Neil Bortz, who has been on the air for 40 years or something, I don't know. But he always, for decades, he's referred to public education as government education, government schools. And a sad attitude that that is prevalent in the country now. So, you know, I don't know. You might want to download some programs to teach your children at home. Kathy and I have talked about this a lot. When the public education system does eventually collapse, which it will, it'll just be unfunded, defunded. We're determined that our kid is going to be educated. And I hope if you have children or nieces or nephews or what have you, grandkids, that you'll make the same determination. We'll be right back. An example of public education dying. Who sent this to me? Well, you know who you are. About Iowa. It says, Iowa House Republicans flexed their new majority muscle by voting to kill a popular program that allows more Iowa children to attend preschool. Determined to secure a budget surplus, presumably for the new Republican governor to subsidize businesses and commercial property owners, the Republican-controlled House voted 60-40 to eliminate the income-based assistance program, which is designed to get more of the state's four-year-olds into preschool. Since 2007, the program has spent $156 million providing supplements to families who would not be able to afford preschool on their own. By cutting the program, Republicans expect the state to save $500 million over the next 3 years, although opponents point out that the savings are ultimately an illusion. The current program, they argue, pays for itself over time as more children stay in school through high school graduation due to the benefits of early learning programs. Percent of Iowa's school districts offer a minimum of 10 hours of preschool a week and are continuing to register children for next year despite the current developments. The bill now journeys to the Senate, where Majority Leader Mike Gronstal has vowed to fight for, the Democrats control the Senate. He has vowed to fight for the preschool program and Iowa's littlest citizens. It just goes on. The writer apparently lives in Canada. Here in Alberta, Canada, where I live now, there is no such thing as preschool. Children are able to enroll in kindergarten at age 4, provided they turn 5 by February of the same school year. While some children may attend what is known as play school, most arrive at kindergarten with no formal school background, and an equal number begin grade 1 without any preschool or kindergarten. Alberta posts some of the highest standardized test scores in the world, although we have an equally disturbing number of young people who never graduate high school. Iowa. Iowa. Who'd have thunk it? And of course, the funding that's being cut are for people who believe in education, want to send their kids to school, preschool, but just can't afford for whatever reason. I guess the teabaggers would say because they didn't pull themselves up with their bootstraps or whatever. But that, you know, that's such a clear example of this class war that's being waged by the neocon fascists who are determined to destroy the United States and replace it with something more to their liking, a Mussolini-style corporatism or fascism. It's really heartbreaking. It really is. Molly went to preschool. She went to preschool for 2 years. And yeah, we paid for it, but what did we pay? What was it? $130 a month or $200 a month or something? About $250 a month was all it was. And of course, if you're not working, $250 a month is, I mean, if you don't have any income, $250 a month is really difficult to come by. But our intention always was to get her into a good public school. And, you know, once she began elementary school, and as far as I'm concerned, we've done that. The public school that Molly goes to is part of a system that's in trouble here in Georgia. The county system is in deep trouble. But the school itself, where our six-year-old attends and 499 other six-year-olds, is in fairly good shape because the parents refuse to not let it be in good shape. That's the only way I can put it. I don't know how else to put it. It's a public school. But the idea of denying, in state after state, Iowa is just, you know, the first or one of many. I don't know if it's the first one to cut the funding. I mean, think about it. Think about what the right-wingers are saying. They're saying if you want to educate your child at the four-year-old level in preschool, you better have your own money. You do it. Get your bootstraps out. As far as state-subsidized preschool education, no. The money's always been there, but we're going to take the money away now. Just like in Arizona, even though it's not necessary, the psychopathic governor there takes the money away from people waiting for organ transplants. Why? Because she can. Why is the legislature in Iowa taking this away from four-year-olds? Because they can. I mean, priorities? And people wonder about, you know, pick one, the Chinese, the Shanghai model of education, how far ahead of us they have become, and the German kids and the Italian kids and the kids from Namibia and the kids from South Africa, you know, they're all... Maybe this is why. We're going to take a break and come back for the final hour. Stick around. I want to get to this. Got a letter here, an email from AJ, the Music Factory, and some other stuff. And your phone calls. If you're on hold, Sanchez, Tom, Ike, stay there. We'll take your call. No right-wingers tonight. You people just turn my stomach. You really do. You make me sick, sicker, sickest. We'll be back. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. Email from Prairie 2 here regarding Comcast. I said the Comcast and Murdoch have a close business relationship. Prairie 2 says Comcast is privately held by a single family, and they are far to the right of Rupert Murdoch. The only competition or strife between Fox and Comcast will be along the lines of buzzards jockeying over the corpse of democracy and individual freedom. Yeah, well, what I meant was, I knew that, Bruce, but Comcast provides outlets for Fox, and Fox, in turn, pays Comcast a lot of money. And unless I'm wrong on that, too. And because of that money relationship, if Comcast wants, or if Fox wants somebody deep-sixed, if Murdoch does, why wouldn't that happen? David Sirota today. I got to share this with you. He writes, a sovereign nation investing its wealth in its domestic economy seems like a no-brainer, especially during a global recession. That would be us. But in this crazy age of American politics, even that has become a controversial notion. This is the subtext of a dispute that simmered beneath the pomp and circumstance of this week's U.S.-China summit. As the New York Times previously reported, the Obama administration is calling on the World Trade Organization to use its power to halt the Chinese government's wind energy fund, specifically because the money is, quote, contingent on manufacturers using parts made in China rather than foreign-made components, end quote. In other words, the Chinese are going to build wind energy systems using parts made in their own country. And the Obama administration doesn't want that. The program, along with the Chinese regime's broader domestic procurement requirements for wind farms, have helped the Chinese wind industry capture almost half of the global market for turbines. Setting aside the bilateral wrangling over WTO arcana, China's industrial policy success carries a basic lesson. Here it is. When a nation couples public spending with incentives that encourage domestic corporate investment, an economy tends to grow its own wealth-building industries. That's simple enough to understand, right? Evidently not within our own government, though, as Buy China policies now economically supercharge the world's most populous nation, China. The White House and congressional Republicans have opposed many of the very Buy America proposals that might help us keep up. Remember, Business Week in 2008 warned that in an America with few domestic purchasing mandates, any economic stimulus, whether spending or tax cuts, would likely leak abroad, thus reducing its impact on jobs here. So, when congressional Democrats responded in 2009 by trying to expand the meager Buy America regulations still on the books from the Great Depression, President Barack Obama opposed the effort. He argued that targeting stimulus dollars at domestic investment would, quote, send a protectionist message. Oh, my God, end quote. Following this salvo, Congress blocked the initiative, and big shocker, a year later, ABC News was reporting that between 54% and 79% of the money in the stimulus bill's key wind energy program had been spent overseas. How could this happen? In a country of USA, USA, chanting sports crowds, flag-waving rallies, and saber-rattling political rhetoric, why haven't our lawmakers passed muscular Buy America statutes that might compete with the Buy China policies? Now, surprisingly, it all goes back to the principle that patriotism may play well with voters on the campaign trail, but corporate cash ultimately rules the day in our nation's capital. Yeah, you can, you know, people can do that USA crap until their asses fall off. But when the rubber meets the road, corporate America, they don't want anything to do with us. We had our shot with corporate America. We had 50 years. It's over. Post-World War II, up until the appointment of Bush and Cheney, that was it. That was our 50 years. Capitalism doesn't, it doesn't, it's not a living, breathing thing. It is amoral. There's, you know, just all capitalism does, and I realize it's handled by humans who do breathe, but all capitalism does is seek the highest profits at the lowest cost. I mean, there's nothing else. And in America, we have something called the middle class. You know, a couple of adults, gay or straight, doesn't matter. A couple of adults, maybe some kids, biologic, adopted, whatever, doesn't matter. But we have this little family, right? And people work, and they have plans. Kids go to college, buy a house, get a car, take a vacation, do this, do that. No, 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 no more. That's over. We had our 50 years. Capitalism says very simply, screw you. We were fine with you bastards until we realized that we could make more profit by going to India or China or Vietnam or the North Mariana Islands. And remember Mexico? Doesn't that seem like, oh my God, so last century, NAFTA opening up. Mexico is going to be, oh, we're going to have all these jobs in Mexico, and they're going to make a lot of money so they can buy American-produced products. Remember that? Remember, flowing cash and products and cows and all kinds of stuff across the border. Remember? Oh my God, that seems like something from the 1800s, doesn't it? Capitalism took a look at that and they said, well, that's cool. But we want the real profit. So they go to China. And what is the lowest cost of producing products in China? 3, 2, 1. Right, the labor cost. As Bloomberg News reported during the stimulus negotiations, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce fiercely lobbied against the Buy America provisions when Congress debated them, just as the chamber lobbies against similar proposals today. That may seem strange coming from an organization whose name pays homage to this country, U.S. Chamber of Commerce. But don't be fooled! The chamber is a front group for huge multinational firms whose first priority is not this nation's economy, but a profit-maximizing business model based on exporting jobs and production facilities to low-wage countries abroad. Those firms, of course, make massive campaign contributions to both parties, and such donations come with the expectation of legislative favors, like, say, killing initiatives to strengthen Buy America laws. Of course. Thus, our current position of humiliating weakness. Here we are, supposedly the world's most powerful country, begging the World Trade Organization to intervene on our behalf so as to prevent an economic competitor from making basic investments in its own economy, China. And we're doing this because our political system is too corrupt to permit a similarly competitive posture here at home. Michael in Roswell sent it to me. David Sirota wrote it. We'll be right back. Live on. We'll be right back.
is. Back to Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Excuse me. I got to share this with you. This is from AJ, the Music Factory. He writes, Mike, almost 2 weeks into the Tucson massacre, and I think I'm starting to get in touch with something. It's not unlike what I experienced after September 11th. It's a heaviness, not quite a depression, but definitely an unease. Though there is no imminent threat to my wife, suddenly I'm oddly nervous when she goes to her teaching job in the morning and curiously relieved when she returns. While our life here is pretty nice and we're generally happy, suddenly there's a film all over everything again. The feeling has not been unlike when you ingest something bad. You feel okay and you feel okay and you feel okay, and then all of a sudden, for no reason you can think of, you don't feel okay. It was horrible. It wasn't horrible poison, this thing you ate, but it has left you queasy nonetheless. I felt this three times in my life. First time started at the age of 10. And went all the way to age 30. Turns out it had everything to do with growing up in an abusive home. Let's hear it for therapy. The second was in the months that followed September 11th when, though perfectly fine, I found myself virtually bedridden for three quarters of the day. My wife, partner, and best friend told me that everyone she knew was going through the same thing to a greater or lesser degree, a sort of mass depression. I thanked her profusely, for I thought that I was going insane. The third time was now. Now, however, I know what I'm dealing with. Welcome to post-traumatic stress disorder. No, it doesn't have to be an all-out it doesn't have to be all-out paralyzing to be legitimate. And you don't have to be a soldier to experience it. You just have to be dealing with traumatic stress. You have to be on the line, and we are. I do not find this bout of this feeling to be as debilitating as the other two, partially because I recognized it early. I was able to put my finger on it when, while listening to Stephanie Miller read from the eulogy of the victim whose husband gave his life to shield her from the madman's bullets, I suddenly doubled over in anguish and tears. I knew this feeling very well. It was quite familiar. This is what I've been going through for the last 14 days. I throw this out there, Mike, because I suspect that others might be feeling this and could use some identifying, like the effects of the nasty thing one has eaten, which they weren't aware of when they did. One may feel knocked for a loop. There is no loop. It's just this. I have no magic remedies for it except to not repress. Talk, feel, cry, scream, hold someone, find help if you need it. Liza and I have always found creating to be amazingly therapeutic. If one denies that they've ingested it, the bad thing, they may even get sicker. It has been my experience that it clearly, if clearly acknowledged and unflinchingly tended to, the wound can heal and the film will lift. Better dead than red. The Music Factory. Phone calls. Indeed. My goodness, I don't mean to leave everybody hanging here. Ike is in Charleston, South Carolina. Hello, Ike.
Hey, Kevin. Well, you know, now that you got into that deal with GE, yeah, it makes perfect sense. I knew something was up when that spokeshole for the so-called United States Chamber of Commerce was backing it. I thought that was a red flag.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, I'll give you some South Carolina news, the dysfunctional state that it is. I don't know if you heard. Of course, for you folks out there that don't know, this state's been run by Republicans for 21 years. And I challenge you to go look in any standing amongst the states, whether it's education or wages or whatever. And you can find us. We're right down there at the bottom. This a-hole governor comes out and says that she will do everything in her power, and this is like the second elected official at the legislative level.
Mm-hmm.
But she said she would come out and she said she would do everything in her power to make sure that there is never another union formed anywhere in this state. And she directed those comments directly at the new Boeing facility that they're building over here.
Yeah.
With, as I might add, a $750 million write-off, tax write-off, they hung the taxpayers for $155 million worth of road improvements that we have to pay for, $10 million worth of training that we have to pay for, and they decertified the machinist union, and the facility, as it's being built 5 miles from my house,
mm-hmm.
who is myself being unemployed for God knows how long, because I speak English and I work construction, the facility's being built by no one from here. You know? And I'm like, you know, I mean, back when we were growing up, let's face it, I got a way of telling you this to wrap it all together.
Okay.
You know, back in the day, we took drugs recreationally just to make things look weird.
Yeah.
And now all these years later, we got a whole bunch of people have to take drugs to make it look normal. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. I know what you're saying perfectly. Yeah, I got to leave it there, Ike. Thanks, man. Good to hear from you again. Stay in touch. We'll be right back.
Truth seekers, gather round the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. Back to your call. Sanchez is in California. Hey, Sanchez.
Is this the Moondog Malloy Oldies but Goodies show? Can I request The Last Time by the Rolling Stones and dedicate it to my homeboy Keith Olbermann?
Man, you sound just like Wolfman Jack.
Almost, man.
Really?
Almost.
Really?
I'm not surprised about Keith Olbermann, man. I mean, you know, we all knew it was coming, but I guess they didn't waste any seconds with the end of the contract. So, wow, I was a little stunned by that, man.
Yeah, you know, it speaks volumes about NBC, I think, when they fire somebody while they're doing their program.
Well, he did really good on the sign-off. He was quite eloquent. I don't know if he was going just by impromptu or if he had a script in front of him. He thanked all his people, and, you know, it was a very concise little thing.
Well,
that he
I
did
think probably during one of the commercial breaks, they let him know, and
somebody wrote that for him.
Yeah, he probably had one of his staff immediately sit down and write something for him. I would imagine at the bottom of the hour, you know, he goes on here in the East at 8 o'clock, and I would imagine at 8:30, they let him know that this was it, and he probably said to one of his staffers, listen, write something for me real quick, because it's going to be the last thing you write for this program.
Well, actually, what are those things called? Well, that those reels, when people die, they already have them pre-produced?
Oh, yeah.
Maybe you already have...
Yeah,
what are those called?
Well, they're in the newspaper business. They are pre-obits.
Yeah, obits. There you go. Right. Maybe he had an obit reel ready to go because he probably saw the handwriting on the wall too. You never know.
I wonder. In watching Olbermann since he first came on MSNBC, which is what, about 7 years ago,
eight years ago.
Yeah. You know, his confidence level has always. Been where you would expect somebody of his stature as a journalist to be. When
mm-hmm.
when his father was dying and he had so much time off from MSNBC, if you remember that, I guess it was about a year ago.
You're right.
His dad was very, very sick, and MSNBC you know, gave him an awful lot of space so that he could take care of his family business. They were very, very understanding to him. And something happened in this past year, and probably a much more condensed time frame than that. The only thing right. that has changed has been the new ownership of NBC Universal, which now passes to Comcast. So, you know, if sometimes when you add one and one and come up with two, immediately people start screaming, "You're a conspiracy theorist!" But I can't see any other explanation. What he was doing, you know, somebody sent me an email and said, well, it was because he went after Joe Lieberman the other day.
That's
bull crap. You know, he's going after a lot of people. It's just so much bull crap. Lieberman is not very, he's not a most favored person right now anyway himself.
Yeah.
But I really do believe that Comcast, which as Prairie 2 pointed out is to the right of Rupert Murdoch, I believe that they definitely had a hand in this. I can remember when I worked at Air America, what was it, Kathy? Was it Salem Broadcasting that pulled Air America's programming off of, I don't know, we were on about 20 or 30 of their stations.
At the very beginning, no?
It wasn't Citadel. Okay. I think it was Salem. But you know, broadcasters would do this. If they are if they're politically oriented to the right, I can't think of any left-wing, well, there aren't any. There aren't any left-wing commercial networks. But the right-wingers do this. If they decide that you're going into territory they don't like, if you're being too anti-capitalist, if you're being too progressive, they'll just turn off the water. They just shut you out. That's it. That's the end of it. And then the little cockroaches running around the country, and there are millions of them, the right-wing cockroaches, who always say, well, the free market determines nobody wants to hear left-wing talk radio. You know, and that's such crap. I mean, whatever.
Well, see, the issue that I wanted to bring up is it's one less progressive voice. I mean, well, not necessarily entirely progressive, but at least he wasn't an apologist for Obama. Especially memorable was his incident from Obama's cave-in to the wealthy for the tax bailout. Ooh, I mean, he let him have it with both fists.
So, right.
Again,
right.
You know, he's not necessarily an apologist. Like, I'm wondering if the rest of them are even going to be around to stick around the NBC network at this point, because that's not what you're going to be hearing from the new MSNBC. This is Comcast. They're the owners. They're pulling the strings now, man.
And don't forget, you know, Oberman was really a decent person. I can't think of too many broadcasters on his level who would do what he did with the health fairs, where people, you know, he asked for donations and then contributed the money to these organizations that conduct the health fairs, so people can go see a doctor that they have, you know, they haven't seen a doctor for years maybe. And also the money that he raised for people in Arizona who were being denied organ transplants because of the psychopathic governor.
Oh, I remember that.
So Oberman has done some things that you just don't see broadcasters do.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of times a broadcaster will, some local show or something will raise money for somebody that was burned or somebody that was killed in a car wreck for their family. But to do it the way Oberman did it was unique, I think, in broadcasting. I can't think of anyone else who went that far in terms of getting help for people, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Hey, listen, man, I hope you don't mind if I jump the tracks here and go outside
go ahead.
Borders here. I wanted to pass you some little activism tidbits that I was doing here. On top of appearing this past Martin Luther King holiday in the MLK parade down here in South Central, I put together a video which you guys could find over in my YouTube channel, which is Sanchez in Montebello. I have a Martin Luther King versus Sly and Robbie mashup. It's kind of like that island reggae rhythm.
Yeah.
So, we were playing that all through the course of the Martin Luther King Day Parade with my friends from Whittier Area Peace and Justice, AnswerLA.org, and the Veterans for Peace, amongst other people that were marching together in the anti-war section of the MLK Parade. So check it out, man, if you haven't had a chance to check it out.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And also one real quick thing, because I don't think this came up on the Mike Malloy wires this evening. Tomorrow is something called the World Chemtrail Awareness Day. There's a documentary that you could watch, which is called What in the World Are They Spraying? this is dealing with this ongoing issue. I crack jokes about it, but on the serious tip, there's a thing which is called geoengineering, where there are people proposing to spray the sky with all types of chemicals. They also call it chemtrails. And so tomorrow is World Chemtrail Awareness Day. I know it's too complicated a subject to talk about here in a two-minute call, but if you go to YouTube, there's any number of compelling videos. Like, again, I say this documentary, which is called What in the World Are They Spraying? And if you check that film out, I do a little walk-on on that one. I was a producer over at KPFK, and I booked the filmmaker, Michael J. Murphy, for a scene that came out in his movie, so I come out in that documentary. But anyway, the subject is chemtrails, which is an ongoing thing. It's these chemical trails. There's a difference between contrails and chemtrails.
Right. Sanchez, I don't want to get too far into it. And only because I don't have a clue. I've seen all this talk about chemtrails for years now.
Yeah.
And I've just never paid any attention to it. I guess it's the idea that stuff is sprayed up in the upper atmosphere,
right.
Dispersants that are just wreaking hell. Bio agents or chemical agents or whatever. And I know I should probably check it out. Whether I believe it or not, I should check it out. Just like the thimerosal autism subject, you know, I checked out and read as much as I could on both sides. So I'll give that a look at some point.
I would invite you and the rest of the truth seekers to check it out, because, like I say, tomorrow's a good day to do that. So thank you for indulging me on that particular subject.
Sure.
I know it was outside the borderline.
No, that's okay. All right, Sanchez.
Cool,
thanks. I appreciate it.
All right, thanks to you.
Oh, and good Wolfman Jack. Except you gotta talk like this if you're gonna do the Wolfman.
You understand? That's a little bad Jack. I'm talking to you, Mike Malloy. You understand?
There you go. Didn't he broadcast from Tijuana?
Yes, he did.
That's what I thought.
Yes, he did. As a matter of fact, I was listening to his program about a month before he died. You know what? He was still spinning vinyl tracks. You could hear all the ticks and pops on the turntable.
Oh my God.
And of all things, KTLA Channel 5 out here in Los Angeles, on the day that he died, they were showing American Graffiti. It just happened to be on the schedule.
What
a fitting tribute, man.
Yeah, for real. All right, thanks, Sanchez.
Okay, man. Take care.
Yeah, you too. Wolfman Jack. I don't know how we got him in the Midwest when I was a kid, but maybe it was from a Cleveland station or a Detroit station. That used to fascinate me, Wolfman Jack. I wanted to be him so bad. And then when I saw American Graffiti, and I couldn't believe it. We booked him to... I and a couple of partners almost put together something that we built as the Last Rock Festival back in 1974. And we had a contract with Wolfman Jack and almost had one with Don Imus to the two of them MC what we were putting together. One of my partners flew out, met Wolfman at a state fair, I think in Nebraska, signed him up. $2,000 down and the rest later. Well, the gig never came off and he got to keep the money. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Before the hour, I want to thank the people who contribute so much to this program. Ben Birch is still our technical dude with the stream from White Rose Society. Sharon Gordy provides military affairs information and other stuff. Bruce Enberg is Prairie 2, economic stuff. Kay Petrini, our education affairs correspondent. Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf. keep track of how many times I lie. Program's engineer is Kathy Bay, and she's also the executive producer of the program. I had something quick here from... all right, where to get to? Damn. Hold on just a minute. Oh, there it is. From Kay, I just mentioned her, our education affairs. She writes, Mike, I just heard about Obermann on the news page at Yahoo. I clicked on the article and read this, quote, he could give a boost to struggling CNN's primetime lineup, but Obermann would mean CNN would make an abrupt shift in its nonpartisan policy. The absurdity of that claim makes me laugh out loud, Kay writes. The reality of losing Obermann's daily commentary makes me want to cry. And sign Kay, what she's talking about, CNN's nonpartisan policy. Oh, for Christ's sake. Nonpartisan CNN. Did you ever watch CNN? Ah! Oh, my God. Tom is in Arizona. Hello, Tom.
Yeah, I told you he was pistol whipped. I told you.
You did?
I called up earlier this week on Monday, and you let me on twice this week. I think that's a snafu on your part. But anyway, my friend Ed from Bullhead City told me to say he was silent. I say he was pistol whipped, just like what I told you earlier this week.
Yeah.
There is no way a man can have his father in the critical condition he was, talking about health care, showing up with pistols on their side, right?
Yeah.
Being laid off, being what was that? Was that, he wasn't laid off. He was, what do they call that? Suspended.
Suspended,
right?
Yeah. You're right.
And then all the progressives got him back in, right?
Well,
No, wait.
Progressives really didn't get him back in. Let me tell you from firsthand experience, Tom, once a media company makes a decision to let you go or suspend you or whatever, they don't pay the least bit of attention whatsoever to the letters or petitions that come in. Now, that's a sad fact, but it is a fact.
Oh,
this is something that folks who watch or listen to radio or television don't seem to understand. I remember, again, I hate to keep using myself tonight, but when I got fired from Air America, there was an online petition that gathered 25,000 signatures. That didn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything. Keith Olbermann could get 500,000 signatures on a petition sent to NBC tomorrow, and it wouldn't mean a damn thing. They don't pay any attention to that. All right?
You're the truth teller. You are the truth teller, man. You are the truth teller. By the way, my wife is Chinese, and I wish I could go on that cruise with you, but I can't talk her into it. She's into making money, and we can't go.
Yeah.
Sucks.
Oh, well.
Sucks. Will you do it again? Is this going to be the last time?
Well, it's not my gig. I mean, I just got invited to go along. I have absolutely nothing to do with it.
I would love to meet you, Kathy. I would really love to meet you, Kathy, me and my wife in a hot tub, and, you know. I would love it.
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
All right.
I'll talk to you later.
All right, Tom.
Bye.
Thanks. I appreciate it. Take care. What did he mean, Kathy, about getting together in a hot tub? You have any idea?
No.
No. Oh.
But I think you should clarify that you do have something to do with the cruise. It's not that you're just going as a passenger.
Oh, no, no. I mean organizing it. I have nothing to do with organizing it. Right? That's what he meant. Right?
I couldn't tell, but just your answer just sounded a little bit like you were just going as a tourist. And
I'm
one of the speakers.
Yeah, one of the speakers and so on and so forth, and one of the active participants. But what I meant was, he said, next time you do one, I don't do these. I didn't do the last one. The one to Mexico. I just go. Keith in Seattle. I was astonished, but shouldn't have been, at who the editors of Time magazine asked to comment in their article on January the 24th issue related to the shooting of Representative Giffords in the head. The title of their discussion, are we becoming an uncivil society? The question is, of course, the dialogue in our media. The question is, of course, has the dialogue in our media become too incendiary, deceitful, mean-spirited? One that Time chose to comment on this issue was the radical right-wing's champion incendiary talk show host Glenn Beck. He's the one who said on the air on Fox in June of 2010, the progressives have gained too much power, and the only way to stop them would be to shoot them in the head. You can actually see this truth-twisting, mean-spirited, self-righteous psychopath say that on YouTube. So, in effect, Time magazine, in its infinite wisdom, saw fit to choose this sick man to comment on whether we are too sick. This is beyond shameful. It's obvious the corporate media can't even see reality anymore. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think everybody gets that, you know, payback is a bitch. Karma of some sort, even if it only exists in the law of physics, does exist. Or in the realm of the laws of physics, it does exist. Mr. Beck will get his comeuppance at some point for sure. I'll see you Monday. You'll have a great weekend. Take care. Keep it lit, okay? I'm Mike Malloy. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.
I'm Jay Farmer.